and welcome to the very last episode of Series 1 of our podcast, Three Lessons from Breakthrough Leaders. I'm Zana Ryabchuk, MD at Breakthrough Global.
And I'm Dr. Bart Sale, Breakthrough CEO and founder. We've spent 30 years developing the Breakthrough methodology to transform companies who want to reach the highest level.
And in this podcast, we'll get to the heart of that transformation, meeting leaders and creative talents to share three lessons that we guarantee will help you and your companies to unleash your potential. And Bart and I will take a moment to analyze the key takeaways and opportunities for breakthrough thinking.
In today's episode, we'll learn from John Radaitsky. John is partner and global brand and marketing leader for EY. Prior to this, his career spans world-class creative agencies, with his own entrepreneurial venture having set up his own advertising, PR, and digital agency. He's also an early-stage startup advisor and investor.
And today, we'll hear these three lessons from John. Authenticity is the path to connection.
You could have the most seductive advertising campaign on the planet. If someone walks into the shop and is hugely disappointed either by the service or the product doesn't work or et cetera, any sense of authenticity is completely undermined.
Purpose comes before profit.
Sustainability is everybody's business. You know, increasingly, I think you'll see more partnerships, people coming together to affect the wider societal issues and contribution business can make.
Why creativity is a magical science.
The biggest barrier to nurturing creative ideas is the interactions between each other when you see an idea and you don't know how to respond. And to this day, I have on every newsroom, what inspires you? What's missing? What doesn't work yet? And what's interesting is it gets people to think about the positive before you get into the negative. That is the way to nurture creativity.
Lesson one, who you are, what you do, well told.
I think the nature of brands in the wake of the, if you like, the consumer contract has definitely evolved over time. And I think, you know, ultimately many of us in sort of, you know, from marketing point of view, would start to think about, you know, ultimately today the consumer owns your brand. You know, whether it's through the feedback, the likes, the reviews system, you know, ultimately the customer can sort of determine the way your brand lands. Probably the biggest shift, I think, and you know, I've heard a lot of discussion in, you know, all sorts of, you know, the communities that I happen to exist in marketing, is authenticity. I think because nothing can be hidden anymore at a brand level, the most important thing is to be authentic to who you are. And that's probably the way in managing that. From an execution point of view, you've got different ways of doing it, whether to, you know, or using influencers today as a way of relating one-to-one at a customer level. You know, it used to be a brand talking from the corporate office to the customer. Now you're talking to the customer through a variety of forums, direct or indirect. But I think for me at the heart is there's a shift and imperative that your brand is reflected authentically to the marketplace. And I think that's a reflection that the customer is more savvy. The customer can understand what's true, what's not true, and they can check it up in an instant anyway.
That's great, John. So authenticity, again, it's a word that I call a fat word. And a fat word is something that has so many different meanings and can be acted on in very different ways. So with our clients, they all talk authenticity.
Yeah.
And they often mean different things.
So, Bart, I like your rebadging as a fat word, and I've not thought about it in that context, and it probably can mean different things to different people. I think in the context of brands, I would say first and foremost, a brand ultimately is a fraction of what a brand is and what a brand does. And then says it does. So when you're communicating about your brand, of course you will tell your best story. Of course you will give of your best narrative around who you are, what you do. But in the end, what you do has to be true. And you know, the other way of maybe explaining that is you could have the most seductive advertising campaign on the planet. If someone walks into the shop and is hugely disappointed either by the service or the product doesn't work etc., any sense of authenticity is completely undermined. What you do, well told, is how to get authenticity.
What John says about authenticity is so true. In companies, people think about the brand, they think about the product, they think about the consumer. What's vital is also to think about the people behind the brand. That's where authenticity starts. When I started Breakthrough, I started working on brands. And one thing we knew was that to transform a brand, you need to start by transforming the people behind the brand. We had a concept. We called it the Zen of branding. What's inside the brand is outside the brand. What's outside the brand is inside the brand. If anything, this is more true today than it was then. And now lesson two, turning rhetoric into reality.
I think when it comes to purpose, we tend to have a challenge when we walk into some buildings, which is that we have values and purpose plastered in very beautiful graphics on the walls often, and not being lived and walked. And I suppose that comes back to authenticity point, John. So what is this gap? How are companies getting this so wrong? And what can you know, organizations like EY, who are really kind of moving this bar forward, give them as advice on what they should be doing differently? Because there's often a huge gap.
You know, ultimately, everyone's talking about purpose. Not everyone is doing purpose. And I think it's the doing word, it's the active word, right? I think, you know, if I think about everything I've ever learned from Breakthrough, you know, you can have all the intent in the world. You've then got to put some kind of methodology and action behind it, you know, and hold people to account. That's, I hope, Bart, one of the lessons I've learned from you. I often quote intent or methodology, which is more important. So in the context of this conversation, I'd say a company without a purpose definitely won't get there. So I think, you know, I would say for those companies who at least got a plaster on the wall, that's a good start, because intent is really important. So I think it's an important step, and I wouldn't underestimate the power of simply putting it on the walls. Having said that, you then need to build actions around that. And I think that's where I think the sort of more enlightened companies of the world, and certainly, you know, we have worked with them, changing the metrics of success are important. So, you know, people are moving to a wider set of metrics around it, because if you put metrics on the board, then you deliver it. I think there's, again, different organizations will have different metrics of delivering their purpose, but, you know, internal staff engagement, how you treat them, how you train them, how you coach your own staff is one metric. How you impact society around you is another metric. So I think for each organization, it's around setting up its clear purpose and then building programs around activating that purpose. You know, we did a campaign from rhetoric to reality. And I think that's where you have to get into being granular around it. So I think, yes, start with plastering it, but it needs to be followed up by, you know, clear action and clear metrics.
I think adding to that, that again, in this sort of evolution of things like purpose within the business world, what we've seen is it's now everybody in the organization that owns that purpose. It used to just be the C-level or, you know, the top leadership, but now it's everybody. And also you get this feedback effect that if the purpose isn't appealing or inspiring or compelling enough, then people just do not want to work for that company anymore, and they feel free to go.
Absolutely, Bart. We know from everything we do, our purpose is one of the primary reasons people want to join us. And increasingly, there's a lot of data around actually all generations, frankly, but particularly next generation who are looking to join an organization or with a purpose that they want to be part of. A higher purpose around that. So I think you're 100% right. It's owned by all the organization. I also sometimes think, you know, it's sort of some of the great companies, it used to be called mission, and there are some great companies that have contributed to society for hundreds of years. But there are many global private companies that have had purpose-driven activations where they've impacted society, you know, they've, you know, transformed villages around them. So I think I think the exciting thing is it's now a matter of course for a organization today to bake it in and not just think about profit. But equally, it's also been around for many years, and some of the greatest companies have proven that purpose, called, used to be called mission, leads to success.
It used to be vision, mission, values.
Absolutely, exactly.
As you said, there's been companies doing this for years and years and years. And one of the key pieces of marketing around purpose is the guy that said the importance of why.
Yeah? Simon Sinek.
That's right. And so it was great marketing. And all of a sudden, you know, we had a new conversation about what purpose is and so on. And companies could then build into that.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt there has been a movement around purpose, and it's a net positive impact to the world. You know, I've been lucky enough to go to quite a few Davoses where, you know, we've held our own sessions with, you know, huge innovators in the world, big global leaders, investors, and the conversation of purpose has shifted, and boardrooms are all discussing it, which means change is on the way, because ultimately the best purposes have a total wide stakeholder impact. And that's a great place to be. Again, I've been lucky coming back from COP 26 in Glasgow. What was amazing is seeing so many business leaders there for the first time, because businesses realize this is a fundamental need. It's not just down to government. It's also up to business now to do its part. These issues are real, and change is happening around us.
Yeah, it's absolutely how what we're seeing as well, John. So 5 years ago, even 3 years ago, we'd start a transformation project, and you know, something that was going to take multiple years. And some brave person at the back of the strategy was read out, would put up their hand and say, "What about sustainability?" And whoever was presenting would say, "Well, we'll come to that later. Right now, we've got a lot to be getting on with for the next 3 years. You know, we can't be doing that as well." And now, every single organisation that we're working with, it's not just that it's sort of a nice to have or it's a pillar somewhere. It is a fundamental. If there's only three things they're focusing on for the next 5 years, one of them is sustainability with every single person that we're working with. And the shift in mindset around that and the intentionality around that is absolutely massive, because people realize it's going to affect them and their children now. And I think that's really something that's driving it on a fundamental human level.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, if I look at our own approach to sustainability, not only is what we do ourselves, but we talk about value-led sustainability. You know, how do organizations protect the value, but also create new value? And I think that's where the focus is going. Actually, in the future, unless you get behind it, you won't create the value in the world that you need to. And so, you know, very much we talk about sustainability is everybody's business. You know, we know there's an ecosystem. And again, that's another thing from a brand point of view, from a business point of view, is we're all in a wider ecosystem. And therefore, to address world issues like sustainability, we have to collaborate like never before. And so that's, again, you know, it's a big shift in the way brands and businesses used to market as, you know, individuals, to now saying, how do we collaborate to affect change in a wider ecosystem? You know, increasingly, I think you'll see more partnerships, people coming together to join up to affect the wider societal issues and contribution business can make to the world.
John's talking incredibly strategically here, from his experience at Davos and working with global leaders. At the start of 2022, Larry Fink, the chief executive of BlackRock, the world's biggest investment fund manager, in his annual letter to CEOs, said that businesses, as well as cities and countries that do not plan for a carbon-free future, risk being left behind. He says that sustainability and climate policies should not be about politics or a social or ideological agenda. It's really about good business and long-term returns. as well as everything else.
On to our next lesson.
Lesson 3, the ideas builder.
You can have all the platforms on the planet. You can have all the data on the planet. But when it comes to marketing and brands, creativity is also a leap that no computer has been able to do. I've asked this, you know, we've created the Better Questions campaign, and I'm actually working on a major study around artificial intelligence. But, you know, to this day, AI cannot ask a question because it's not smart enough yet, right? And so I think somewhere between using technology as a facilitator of a connection, facilitator, an augmenter, an accelerator, there's lots of huge benefits that we can use technology for that are creating unimaginable ways to connect with people. However, the experience that you create, the story you put out, the piece of content is the sticky stuff. I had a session last week with a guy called Rory Sutherland, who's a chairman, vice chairman at Ogilvy, which is one of the top agencies. And it was a fascinating one. And he's written a brilliant book called The Alchemy, The Surprising Power of Ideas That Don't Make Sense. But what was amazing is he was talking about data and the fallacy of following the data. Because you can draw very radical wrong interpretations around data. And that's not always, you know, what gets measured, he explained, is not always what gets done. Sometimes because you're getting done the metric as opposed to what you should be doing, which is the magic. So it's a whole separate thing, but I think somewhere between understanding what's a metricable and understanding how to create something new that's never been thought of before is where I think the tension in marketing today is. There's a bit of a kind of divide between people who think everything is data-based and those people who think it's everything magic-based. And in the end, it's about both.
You've just touched on one of the things I've always known you to be passionate about, and that's creativity. Mm-hmm. How do you nurture creativity in your organization?
First and foremost, I think before you nurture creativity, you want to attract people who love creativity and are experiencing creativity. It's not to say you can't learn it, and that's part of it, but I think fundamentally, you know, it's best to start with people who love that part of the business. I think then, you know, I don't think it's dissimilar to too many different things. It's about setting an ambitious bar about what creativity could do. It's about creating processes. You know, one of the processes that we created is something called Newsroom, which is, you know, we meet three times a week where different parts of the business bring ideas to a group of cross-functional specialists. We've got, you know, team, because we all think differently about ideas today, and you've got to think in different media today. So it is more of a team sport, I'd say, than ever before. Today's creativity has to be distributed in so many different ways that you need different teams of people thinking about ideas. And then, you know, there's no doubt learning, coaching is an essential part of it. I think, you know, I do encourage people to get out of the office. I think a lot of the time people get quite insular. I think the creative business, you've got to stay hungry and refuel your mind. And then I think the one thing I would say about nurturing creativity, and this is not just because you're interviewing me, Bart, but I think to this day, the best power tool is what I learned from you 20 years ago, which is your I don't know what you call it, but I've rebranded it the Ideas Builder framework. So it might be you've got a better one. But the biggest barrier to nurturing creative ideas is the interactions between each other. When you see an idea and you don't know how to respond. And to this day, I have on every newsroom, what inspires you? What's missing? What doesn't work yet? And I have to say that is something that I have carried from you. And what's interesting is it gets people to think about the positive before you get into the negative. Or they get the negative, but then they have to fill in that first thing. And I always say, what inspires you? Even if it's thanks for coming to work today, like get someone in a positive mood for trying. And I'm guilty myself of sometimes going what I don't like to cut the time. And I regret that often. But anyway, that is the way to nurture creativity. Get you in and your team to help frame more empowering conversations to nurture creativity.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Actually, it's interesting because what inspires you in that format that I used with you 20 years ago, that was often the hardest question for people. They'd easily go into, well, what works and what's not working and what's possible. And they'd shortchange the what inspires you.
That is the essential, because often the little bit that inspires could be the idea that leads to something. And I think I read somewhere on David Lynch said something like, ideas are like catching fish. And I think the bit that's inspiring is the bit that you have to get clear on how to catch the fish in the middle of stuff that might not be working. You know, often an idea is executed badly to start with. The color of a visual might be completely wrong, and people cannot get past the color of the visual to spot the fact that there's a good idea behind it. And then I think there's confidence part. I think you know, maybe over the years, people don't like saying what inspires, because they are afraid that people might disagree with them. And I think that's the other part of, I think, ideas is encouraging people to disagree and not always agree with each other to start with, and have different opinions.
I think you're onto something there, definitely. And I think another thing related to that, as you've been talking, John, I've been thinking that in that set of questions, which you call the idea builder, I like that name actually, and we call the feedback frame.
That's right. Yeah.
We've been guilty of actually moving the inspiration part out of it and having it more of a what's working, what's not working, etc. But now I've thought about that question again. That question is so much more about you than the other questions.
Definitely. You know, most people are trained to critique, not to build. You know, I often, one of the other things that I spend a lot of time is, which I think is essential for this business, is connecting different strands to create new ideas. And that, you know, in some ways that's what great creative people do. They just connect thoughts. I'm lucky in my business. I've never professed to be a great copywriter or art director. And so I'm in awe of the creative geniuses that I've worked with. But what I do believe I know is how to spark that. And that's where I think, you know, the ideas start off kind of fragile. But if you get the right teams around it, you can build and nurture and take a kernel of a thought into something that's amazing at the end of it.
Listening to John talk about creativity and inspiration is infectious. It gets you feeling creative and inspired. Because inspiration is the fuel that feeds our motivation and our intentionality. It gives us and our teams the energy to keep going when things get tough. So spend more time connecting with the things that inspire you, because it will repay huge dividends as an investment. As leaders, as family members, as friends, we owe it to ourselves and those around us to be the most inspired version of ourselves. I know that I certainly want to be around inspired people, and I owe it to them to be the most inspired version of myself, to give them that energy. So take a moment now and ask yourself, what inspires you in life? Is it nature, family, inspirational people, those who overcome adversity? And then ask yourself, what inspires you about where you are in your life right now? All right, let's move on to the hot seat questions.
What, those weren't the hot seats?
John, so this is the part of the show where we ask you your hot seat questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Excellent.
Depending on how hot they are. Then
sizzling, John, sizzling. All right, what's the most exciting thing you've ever done?
That I can say publicly.
Exactly.
The one that I always hold on to is my snowboarding off-piste, where I had to walk up a hill, stand desperately holding myself, and the snowboard instructor saying, unless you actually stand up, you will cause an avalanche and kill yourself. And standing up at the top of a precipice and just having to go down was probably to this day the most exciting moment of my life. So I'd pick that one. Obviously, the other exciting thing is having children, but it's a different experience from snowboarding. That's for sure.
Although maybe some similarities. I'm not sure. What brings you energy and motivation in everyday life?
again, you know, just to share, I suppose, one of the things that I shifted, and again, Bart, if I may thank you, in the middle of COVID lockdown, we all needed to reach out to people and say, help, what I do. And I think you sent me on this program. It was an Anthony Robbins, one of these online things. And one of the biggest changes is getting up at 6 o'clock, not waking up, looking at my emails and doing some exercise and some meditation in the morning. I think actually not looking at emails until you're ready and sorted your day out in your head is probably the best thing that allows me to be inspired for the rest of the day. If I look at emails, it tends to go badly from there on in.
This is very good advice. Very good advice indeed. I couldn't agree more. This is what I keep saying to my husband, John, but he won't listen. Finish this sentence. Success is
worth striving for, but you might not know it when you get there.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And in case our listeners want to get in touch with you or find out more, what's the best way for them to do that? Is that through social media? Should they get in touch?
Yeah, I think so. I think LinkedIn is probably the best. If you know, by all means, if they reach out to you, happy for you to flip on anything and any relevant connections, be great. So yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Thank you so much, John. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very, very much.
John, it's been fantastic, as
Thank
I
you.
Knew it would.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you so much for joining us for today's episode. It's the last episode in series one. We'll start recording series two this summer, so stay tuned and remember to subscribe to us. You can reach out to us at Breakthrough Global on LinkedIn or Facebook, via Twitter at Radiant Clarity, or Instagram at Global Breakthrough.
And we'd love to hear your feedback and your own leadership stories. We'd also love for you to share this episode on your own social media and review and rate this podcast on your player of choice, as we want to spread these transformative lessons as wide as possible.
And thanks to our production team, Yulia Schultes over at Breakthrough Global and Robin Lieburn at Fairly Media. And of course, thank you for listening. See you next time.